It's interesting what it takes in terms of evidence to have people change their practice. John's been talking about the Sophia trial and this theoretical strategy of continuing AI and adding in fulvestrant for a while now. A lot of oncologists in the United States, maybe a third, are actually starting to utilize this in their practice in spite of the fact that you don't. Ken, have you utilized that strategy yourself in a non-protocol setting? And what are your thoughts about theoretical basis of it?
You know, sometimes I forget to tell the patient to stop it. I think John summarized it well. There's no clinical data, but the preclinical data is very strong. It comes from our laboratory, and it comes from Angela Brody's laboratory as well, in addition to what you showed. And that is, in a situation where there's still some estrogen around, compared to estrogen deprivation and then adding fulvestrant, fulvestrant works much, much better. For reasons that I'm not quite sure about, because it should be able to knock off estrogen off the receptor at the doses we're talking about, because it has relatively high affinity. But when you put a little bit of estrogen back into these mice, it just doesn't work as well. Now, having said that, do I routinely do both? I'd say no. I'm anxious to see what the results of the studies are. In this particular patient, I would probably use fulvestrant or high-dose estrogens. Those would be my two choices.
You say you generally don't. Have you utilized that strategy in some patients?
Yeah, in some I have. The issue is how fast do you get to therapeutic levels? And remember, you saw even in the maintenance phase of the pharmacokinetic studies that John showed, there's not much of an increase in the 250 dose versus the 125 dose. We know the 125 dose is ineffective. And so the 250 dose might be barely effective. And in some patients, it may be too low. So in a patient where they have a little bit more aggressive disease, and you think you need to get the levels up, I might do it in that patient. But in a patient with bone-only, indolent disease, I probably do the once-a-month schedule.
John?
I just want to comment on Kent's point. I mean, I agree completely, and I didn't deal with the issue of dose, and it is an issue. I mean, 250 is a clinically effective dose, but I agree with you that it may get better. And in fact, if you look at the curves there, the model curves and the individual dots with the patients, and there's a fivefold variation in the concentration between patients. That's a logarithmic scale. And it's not just Faslodex. You see it with other endocrine therapies as well. So this is not a problem with Faslodex only. All endocrine therapies seem to have a wide range of concentration across individual patients. And so the point Kent make there about individual patients, it may be a much more lower dose than you think the average dose is a very real question to be addressed. The one point I make with Kent is I like the concept too of increasing the dose or decreasing the estrogen. And I know Angela Brody's data. The point I'm making is that was giving the two up front to start with and not coming in with Faslodex continuing on the AI. So it's a slightly different situation. I know we're still competing, but it's not exactly the same clinical scenario that we're discussing today.